today, Mosley v. Maytag Corporation. Mr. Rose.
Thank you, Your Honor. We're reserving 5 minutes, so try to sit down after 10 or before.
the lights will tell you when you're...
Thank you very much. This is a case of employment discrimination brought in the district court under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and under 42 U.S.C. 1981. The district court granted summary judgment. We believe that in doing so, it committed two kinds of errors. First, it failed to assess the record as a whole and focused on individual pieces, saying in the opinion sometimes that this piece by itself isn't adequate and that piece by itself isn't adequate. It failed to recognize, the court recognized that there was a disputed issue of fact on the question of whether Mr. Mosley was qualified. Yet the discrimination here was in failing to follow its, at least a reasonable juror could conclude, that the discrimination here was in its failure to follow its normal practice of promotion from within, assessing the internal candidates for their capabilities based on their performance. Mr. Mosley, they also awarded some weight to seniority. Mr. Mosley had not been promoted since he became a supervisor in 1975. All of the white employees who were supervisors had been promoted more than once in that interim. There was no written evidence produced as to why he was deemed inadequate. The reason that was ultimately relied on by the district court was never asserted by the employer in response to the EEOC investigations. In fact, the first position that Maytag took was that Mr. Mosley was not promoted because he'd showed no interest in it. The evidence showed that he had asked his former supervisor, Mr. Brooks, several times and was interested in it. The second time the Maytag contacted EEOC in answer to a questionnaire, it adhered to the position that he wasn't interested in it and also stated that he wasn't fully trained or he wasn't trained in some of the techniques of Kaizen and some other names of production techniques. Yes, sir.
A question here. You're focusing on two positions, one April of 01 and another one in the fall in October. The person who got the April 01 position, this white male,
yes,
was let go in October of 01.
Right.
In a reduction in force. Would the record tell us if Mosley had got that April 01 promotion position, would he, like the white male, have been discharged in October?
I think not. His work
record... do we know one way or the other?
We don't know for sure, but there's evidence in the record that suggests that he would not have because he was very senior. Gingland, there's a chart or a matrix in the record that shows that seniority counts and performance counts, and... Mosley had much more than 20. I guess he had 20 years or more at the time. And if he had performed in this level supervisor job anything like the other one, everything he did was highly satisfactory, or above satisfactory. So there's no indication at all that there would have been a problem. In fact, we believe that Gingland was fired because he was not a competent supervisor, and there's evidence in the record to suggest that. And the very fact that the district court appeared, we believe the most important discrimination occurred when they went outside. Their normal practice was to promote from within. That was agreed upon. And the district judge recognized that that was agreed upon, and it was only, the district judge didn't follow the logic of his determination that there was a disputed issue of fact as to whether he was qualified. It was pretty clear he was, but Mr. Unger testified on deposition 3 years later that he didn't think any of these guys were qualified. One of them was subsequently promoted in June of 2002, and we think the district court erred in not considering that promotion also because that occurred after the EEOC, after the charge was filed, and EEOC investigated that occasion too, so that the defendant had full opportunity to assert its position. EEOC wrote a report. It found that there was discrimination continuing through that 02 promotion and that Mr. Mosley was better qualified than the person who was selected in 02, and that there was ample evidence that Mr. Mosley was qualified. He had an associate's degree. He was the only supervisor, except for Mr. Unger himself, who had any kind of a college degree. He had years of experience, and he was getting good ratings. He was clearly qualified. The person who got promoted in 02 had less than 3 years, and 3 years was the announced requirement in the advertisement. So I think the district court's failure to consider the overall statistics, which EEOC relied upon, failure to consider the fact that EEOC found probable cause. If EEOC found probable cause, it's a reasoned two- or three-page paper. It makes sense. If EEOC could find it, so could a jury, we believe. And the district court just disregarded the EEOC report, even though it was there. And even though the investigator who prepared it, Ms. Wodka, and the director who signed it, Mr. Rowe, both are in Chicago, they're easily available. Their depositions could be taken if the agency thought there was some procedural or other error in their finding. I'm not saying it's binding. Of course, the EEOC determination is not binding, but the facts were articulated. It was a well-written report, and it makes sense. The district court refused to consider it. And the court in Reeves repeated something that the Supreme Court's been saying and clarified really a little bit, that on summary judgment, you need to look at all the pieces. It's a mosaic. Judge Posner called it twice, once recently and once in the department store case from about 10 or 12 years ago. So we think there is there is a disputed fact. The essential discrimination wasn't going outside. They made a mistake in going outside, they being the defendant. The person they hired had some facial. His resume looked good. His job application didn't look so good, so it didn't, because it didn't show his income. He said he was self-employed. He said he sold to his partner. He didn't give his income in a few years, and he said he was the victim of a RIF. Well, there are two kinds of RIFs, Your Honor. Some of them are weeding out the people who shouldn't stay, and some of them are based solely on seniority. A reasonable employer would have inquired. I'll save the rest of my time unless you have questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rosen. Ms. Ferguson?
Good morning, Your Honor. Counsel for the plaintiff appellant, my name is Tiffany Ferguson, and this morning I'll be arguing on behalf of MEGTEC Corporation. There are a few issues raised by the plaintiff that I would like to address, but at the outset I would like to point out, given the court's question, that we contend that the plaintiff appellant waived any claim as to the October 2001 promotion. It's not addressed sufficiently in their briefs before this court, and in waiving that argument, we don't think that there should be much weight given to the plaintiff's arguments with regard to what happened as to the October 2001 promotion. We, in turn, in our briefs, focused on the April 2001 promotion, and we'll do so this morning. Counsel for the plaintiff appellant focused on the finding by the district court that there was disputed issue of material fact as to the second prong of the indirect method of proof that the district court found applied in this case. And as to that second prong, plaintiff is correct, and at least in his statement as to what the district court found, that Maytag had provided and had not indicated what its reasons were for not selecting Mr. Mosley for the April 2001 promotion in its papers to the EEOC. In the position statement, we indicated only that Mr. Mosley had not expressed any interest in the position. When we got to the questionnaire, we made a comparison between Mr. Mosley and the selected candidate, William Ginglin, who was not a member of Mr. Mosley's protected group. So we made a comparison in the questionnaire response as to their respective qualifications in an effort to explain why we believed at the time that William Ginglin was the better candidate. We suggest that while the district court found that there was a disputed issue of material fact as to that second prong, we maintain that there was not a differing in our positions. Nonetheless, the district court ruled as it ruled, and as to the second prong, found that there was a disputed issue of material fact.
It's not binding on us, so it's kind of a red herring. This is de novo review.
I understand. As to the third prong of the prima facie case, there was not a dispute before the district court. As to the fourth prong, which plaintiff did not address in their arguments before the court, the district court found in Maytag's favor. It analyzed the qualifications of Mr. Ginglin and the evidence put forward by Mr. Mosley as to his qualifications and found that a reasonable trier of fact could have found that Mr. Ginglin was the better qualified candidate given the information that Maytag had available to it at the time. There was nothing in the record to support plaintiff's contention that he in any way was so superior to the selected candidate that clearly no rational trier of fact could have selected William Ginglin for the position. Given that, the plaintiff had failed to meet his burden to satisfy all four elements of the prima facie case of race discrimination. And the district court went on to find in favor of Maytag, and we would ask that that decision be upheld. With regard to some of the other issues that plaintiff raised before its arguments this morning, I note that plaintiff has ignored the fourth prong of the prima facie case and has not devoted much attention to that. In fact, in their briefs, they really point to several instances of what they believe is indicative of discriminatory conduct by Maytag. And now for the first time, particularly in light of the case that the plaintiff supplied to the court and to ourselves yesterday, now attempts to set forth an argument that really what they have been arguing all this time is that there was a mosaic of various incidents various pieces that could have allowed the district court to find in its favor, and that this court should adopt such a theory, except that in its briefs before this court, the plaintiff appellant acknowledges and adopts the indirect method of proof on page 42 of its brief. It makes no attempt to talk about the mosaic theory or even to discuss a direct evidence method of proof, which is the only way, really, that the mosaic theory would come into play. Plaintiff is also, and they spend some time on this in their briefs before the court, has also discussed the statistics that were also raised before the district court. As the district court found as to those statistics, we maintain that the statistics involved were not sufficient enough to uphold a favorable decision for the plaintiff appellant. We would like to point out two important facts about how the decision process was made for the April 2001 promotion. The decision maker in the case, Ronnie Younger, considered but rejected all the internal candidates available to him for the April 2001 promotion. Mr. Mosley was one of the candidates he rejected. Because he rejected those candidates, he asked Human Resources to place an ad to see if he could find the kind of candidate that he was looking for. As a result of that process, they were led to the selected candidate, William Gingland. When William Gingland submitted his resume, as well as he was interviewed, ultimately he was chosen as the candidate that Maytek thought was best for it. The court is correct. Mr. Gingland was subsequently riffed about 6 months later after he had been hired. And subsequently, the position that he had was combined with an existing position, general supervisor scheduling, and that was a position that was filled in October 2001. That's the fall position that the plaintiff has made some reference to in its arguments. That position, William Gingland was considered for but rejected, and while it is true that one of the things that the plaintiff considered was his prior poor performance with the company. I don't know that we know what Maytek would have done had Mr. Mosley been in the position and they decided, as the record establishes, that they were going to combine both the positions. While it is true that Mr. Mosley had significant time in with the company, it's also true that many of the other candidates considered for that October 2001 promotion also had significant time in with the company. William Gingland would have been the most junior of those that were considered for that position. Given that, unless there are further questions from the court, we would ask that the district court decision be affirmed.
There is no dispute that the criteria for the October promotion excluded anybody who didn't have a particular title, this general supervisor title? That's undisputed in the record?
It's not disputed in the record. The plaintiff offered no evidence to contravene that fact. The evidence that we suggest that the position matrix that plaintiff appellant referred to, all the candidates considered were all general supervisors. Mr. Mosley was not a general supervisor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have your 5 minutes, Mr. Rosen.
Thanks, sir. There are ways beyond the McDonnell-Douglas to make a prima facie case, and Judge Posner discussed them in Troop as well as others. And one of the ways is to show that an individual or a group of individuals was treated less favorably than the comparable white or male applicants. That's what we have here, is a pattern by Maytag stretching from 1975 to the times in question here, and I include the 02 times both deliberately, and they were not discussed.
But this circuit's case, this is not a pattern of practice case.
No,
and
it's
this
not
circuit's
a pattern of practice.
Case law says that, you know, exclusive of a pattern of practice case, you can't base your whole case on statistics.
Well, we don't base our whole case on statistics. The error here was that we had a qualified person, or at least there was a disputed issue of fact about it. He had not been selected four times. Whites had been selected, the selectees, with the exception of Gingrich.
There was never, he was employed by this company for 25 years prior to this October or April of 01 matter, and I didn't see any place where there were claims about other discriminatory acts. You said he applied for other positions, didn't get them, but I don't see any evidence here or any argument that was made that there was prior discrimination afoot here.
Oh, we argued in the district court, the plaintiffs argued that there was a pattern of 15 new supervisors, all of them white, from 2000
to
2002.
That doesn't necessarily prove discrimination.
It does. Doesn't necessarily prove. The jury is supposed to be the finder of fact as to whether there is discrimination. And summary judgment is not supposed to be granted unless there is no disputed fact.
I guess what I'm getting at is he was employed here a long time.
Sure.
I don't see any claim that was made in this case that he was denied a promotion for racially discriminatory reasons at any particular times prior to this October or April of 01 claim.
You
say there were other promotions, but
he had not filed an EEOC charge before. He had raised racial concerns with the company as early as 89, and he had expressed concerns before he filed the charge. He had talked to Mr. Brooks. Mr. Brooks thought he was qualified, and Mr. Brooks said that he would have been a good performer if he had been given as much training as Mr. Brooks himself had. That's a dispute between their current employees of Maytag. That's sufficient to raise an inference. And the inconsistent positions themselves, according to this court's case law, is itself may raise an inference of discrimination. And that being the case, since they didn't know what the reason was, and they generated varying reasons, that is itself enough for a jury to infer that the real reason was race.
Well, that goes to pretext, and you don't get to pretext unless you can show that the candidate who actually got the job
was
not better qualified. And
have competed. That was the point I was trying to make in my opening, and I obviously didn't make it, Your Honor, so let me try again. The discrimination was not, he didn't compete head-to-head with Ginglin. The discrimination was in their not following the usual practice of promotion from within, since there was a disputed issue of fact among the incumbents. Among the incumbents, he had the best of the objective measures, years of service and education, and as far as the record shows, performance appraisals. That's enough to warrant an inference of discrimination without necessarily going to McDonnell Douglas. The courts in the Swierczycki case, I'm sorry, I never know how to pronounce that, versus Surima, it's a 2002 case of the Supreme Court, talk about different ways to show discrimination, and while McDonnell Douglas is certainly one and direct evidence is another, a pattern of behavior and a certain kind of conduct by the employer is another.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.